Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, Dr. Martin Luther King Day here in America, January 19th. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about liberal arts education. One of our guests in a recent article talks about a special commission that was appointed by the U.S. Secretary of Education, Margaret Spellings, in 2008 to consider how best to improve our system of higher education. And the analysis and recommendations didn't even mention liberal education or the liberal arts. The 95, there are only 95 liberal arts colleges in the country, and our guest says that they are in trouble. The number of people who view themselves as liberally educated is declining. The number who wish they were liberally educated is declining even faster. And the number who think they know what a liberal education is, or even that they would like to know, is shrinking fastest of all. Is this troublesome? Our guests today are Victor Farrell Jr., former president of Beloit College from 1991 to 2000, who's written extensively on this and says we should be asking different questions about the value of a liberal arts education, that maybe what we've said about it, that it leads to critical thinkers, is a little bit off the mark, and we should be saying other things about the value of liberal arts education. And we'll be talking about what he sees as the value during the course of our conversation. Hello, Victor Farrell. Thanks very much for being with us. Nice to have you here today. Thank you. Also joining us is Professor Warren Goldstein, a professor and chair at the Department of History at the University of Hartford, who's also written about the value of a liberal arts education. Professor Goldstein, thank you so much for being with us.
Good to be here.
Yeah,
thanks.
Why don't we start with you, Vic? How would you describe liberal arts education? Do we need a definition of it? Is it a study of philosophy and science and English and all areas of thought?
Well, this is a very sensitive issue because it's really the act of learning for the sake of learning.
Mm.
It's learning. A liberal education is an attitude. It's an interest in knowing, a curiosity, a wanting to understand, as opposed to vocational education, which is you want to be a policeman, you take a law enforcement course. So,
mm-hmm.
liberal education. It is about wanting to use your mind. It's about wanting to think.
Hmm. It's sort of like public radio. When you were saying that, I'm thinking, that's what we do, right? Yeah.
It's kind of appropriate to be talking about it on this particular day because it's about kids.
Hmm.
And it's about kids who have different opportunities and how you bring them forward.
Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that definition? Add to it, Professor Goldstein?
Well, I think I agree with it fundamentally, but I think I probably disagree some. And I wonder whether we're in danger sometimes. I mean, I'm a very strong advocate for liberal arts education, and I've written about it, and I think it's fundamental to, by the way, continuation of public radio. I don't think you have audiences without mm-hmm. liberally educated people. So I believe strongly in it, but I don't think we want to imply, and I'm sure Vic didn't really mean to imply this, that somehow we don't want police officers, lawyers, or accountants who can't think liberally as well as in their disciplines or profession.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think I would argue that a liberal education is actually for everyone. I don't really believe in professional or vocational education at the four-year level. Most business people don't particularly like students who come out of college with a business degree. I think that a liberal arts education, and I think I would include sciences in that as well, is the kind of education that gets people thinking with the classical disciplines. I mean, these are not things that were invented overnight. Folks have been studying philosophy, literature, languages, government, history, art history, for a very long time. Now we group them together and call them a liberal arts education. That's fine. But I do think that it's more than just thinking, because thinking happens everywhere. Lord knows we need accountants who can think.
Right.
Well, I agree with that completely. I went to law school, and I know to an absolute personal certainty that one doesn't learn how to be a lawyer in law school. One may learn some skills in thinking, but not how to be a lawyer. The same goes for business school and for any kind of vocational education. There's nothing wrong with being vocationally educated, but there is something wrong with not wanting to use your mind. And in addition, there's something wrong with not wanting to know what's happened in the history of mankind. You know, is the history of mankind American Idol and Wife Swap?
Right.
Or is it public radio? And there's one particular area I would mention, which I'm sure Warren would agree with, and that's history. History is as close to practical education, vocational education, as you can have. If you don't know history, you're going to make terrible blunders. We've just gone through 8 years of having our country run by people who don't seem to know history. If you think that you're going to invade the Middle East after 1,000 years of Westerners invading the Middle East and be greeted as liberators, you don't know anything. And we simply can't run a world with that kind of ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Let me expand a little bit on what Vic said. On the one hand, I completely agree. I mean, as a historian, I am frequently shocked. Most people in my profession do a lot of hand-wringing about how little Americans know about their own history, much less world history. And so that's concerning. But history is also not, like all the other disciplines I mentioned, history is not a grab bag of useful lessons. History is also a way of thinking about the world. One of the great U.S. historians, William Appleman Williams, called it's a way of learning. Philosophy is a way of learning, too. Studying art history is a way of learning. English is a way of learning. It's a way of learning and training the mind to be able to evaluate the world and to see how other people have answered fundamental questions about the world. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you dip down and read Theodore Roosevelt because you want to either avoid or accomplish something that that Theodore Roosevelt did or didn't do. It's a way of entering into the history of humankind to see how other people have made decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to the accountant. I think all accountants need a liberal arts education before or alongside, but preferably before they get the professional education that teaches them how to do audits. Liberally educated accountants, I'd go so far as to say, might have thought more deeply about what they were being asked to pass on in the last dozen years or so in terms of double booking at two sets of books at Enron, or the kind of free and easy and casual assertion of value that ratings agencies engaged in, for instance, that led us to the kind of financial crisis the country's in right now. Liberally educated people also know something about the history of ethics and how to approach complicated problems in life. And what I worry about is that our students aren't getting that kind of education, and when they're not getting it, they don't even know they're not getting it.
Interesting. Vic, are they more interested in what Calvin Coolidge described as the chief business of the American people being business? They want business degrees? They want to make a lot of money?
They want security and money. Yeah, they really do. And there's a real change going on, and it's encouraged by their parents. There's a pretty darn good school system in suburban Milwaukee where the junior high school offers career days for eighth graders. I mean, that shows you what they're worrying about. And I think Warren points to another thing that we should have on the table when we're talking here, and that is the importance of having let's eliminate the word liberal. It just confuses us. Let's call people well educated or broadly educated. It matters to the individual, and that's what we talk about, and that's what. But Warren suggested that it also matters to society.
Mm-hmm.
It matters hugely. And Lord Brougham told the House of Commons a couple hundred years ago that educated people are easy to lead but difficult to drive, easy to govern but impossible to enslave.
I like that.
And he didn't mean people who had learned how to be accountants. He meant people who thought and were curious and didn't accept the established wisdom without question.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, and this has really been central to the whole purpose of public education, although we tend to forget it. Thomas Jefferson argued that the function of public education was really twofold. It was either to help people to learn their professions, their trades or professions, or to help people protect themselves from their government. help people protect themselves from their government. Hmm. What I worry most about, and I've worried a lot in the last 8 years in particular, is that very few of my own students have the intellectual equipment, and by that I don't mean brains. Many of them are very intelligent, but they haven't furnished their minds with the kind of equipment that would enable them to protect themselves from their government, which makes them easy to lie to.
Oh, that's interesting.
Kathleen, this sounds like a love fest. We need to find somebody to
disagree more.
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry. The hour is not over yet. You know, I was thinking about some of that. I happen to absolutely love, for a variety of reasons, Abraham Lincoln. And I was watching this marvelous concert at the memorial yesterday.
It was really something,
oh,
wasn't it?
It was so beautiful. And part of it was, you know, if you watch that, knowing about Abraham Lincoln, and if you don't spend some of today reading what Abraham Lincoln said, you don't know how important he is to this administration. You don't know the incredible significance of this moment. I mean, I was reduced to tears watching this, and then the Washington Monument and the White House and slaves who built it, etc. All this history that obviously the incoming president knows about, but we need to know about as well, just to be able to appreciate a moment sometime.
It's really true. But look at what's exciting about Barack. I mean, there's so many things to me that are exciting about Barack Obama, especially in this moment. But one of the things is that this is a man who also took seriously his liberal education, his liberal arts education. Mm-hmm. This is someone who ponders words. Mm-hmm. It's someone who writes beautifully. You don't write as nicely, as beautifully, and evocatively as Dreams from My Father is written. Without having taken seriously the discipline of writing, of sentences, of grammar, of thinking, of philosophy, and the like. Barack Obama may be one of the best arguments for a liberal arts education we're likely to get in a very long time. Because he didn't learn to do that, right, Vic, in law school. He learned to do that someplace else.
But you ought to say something about Abraham Lincoln, too, who didn't go to school and yet was liberally educated. It makes the point that I think so many people miss, that you don't go to school to get a liberal education. You make a liberal education out of a life. And Lincoln wrote well, wrote brilliantly, and read widely. And it is the stimulation of those desires that a liberal education seeks to do, not the conveyance of a credential or a diploma or a certificate, which so many people see it as.
Mm-hmm.
It's really true. You know, we ought to get to the question of parents, because Vic raised this. You know, he was president of a very fine liberal arts college.
Yes.
I have students all. Did you teach some when you were president?
I did a little, yes.
You got to know your undergraduates pretty well, I imagine.
Yes.
And you know their parents very well. And what you see among parents are terrified of of their kids majoring in the liberal arts.
Mm-hmm.
At our little preview sessions that we do in the College of Arts and Sciences, we note that parents are always pushing their kids to go over towards computer science. Why do they send them towards our politics and government department? Because they think that's the pre-law track. And our pre-law committee tells them that, in fact, any BA in just about any field will qualify you for law school.
And I will guarantee you, Warren, that there is nobody on the faculty at Yale Law School who took a pre-law course.
Absolutely.
They took English literature, or they took history, or they took political science, or they took philosophy, but they didn't take pre-law.
But parents are really worried.
They
for a variety of reasons. I mean, the tuition at liberal arts colleges is extremely high. Parents can expect to spend, you know, close to $200,000 over 4 years. They either borrow it or get grants for it, but that's the kind of bill that they're looking at now. My wife and I borrowed uncountable sums of money to send our three children to liberal arts colleges. Fortunately, they were twins, so we got a little break when the two of them were in school together. But
wait, I want to hear more about that later.
But you have parents who are looking at an enormous price tag,
right.
And then they read article after article about the job market being tough for graduates, and especially for liberal arts graduates, and they very reasonably wonder, what am I suggesting for my child? I published a piece in the Chronicle of Higher Education a while back, a kind of an open letter to Click and Clack.
Yes, I saw that.
What bothered me about Click and Clack is the way they put down liberal arts degrees.
Especially since they both went to MIT.
Right, exactly.
Yes, exactly right.
Especially when they find a woman and she's in graduate school, they all immediately begin to sort of make fun of her being an art history graduate student. Mm-hmm. And what kind of a life is there for someone with an art history degree? The truth is that folks with art history degrees often do very well. For the Yale Alumni Magazine, I interviewed a bunch of very successful graduates, people successful in business terms, and I ended up finding that half of them had art history degrees.
That's great.
None of them had a business degree. They all said to me that they would never hire someone with a business degree.
But can I
they
tell
trusted that?
Can I tell a slightly depressing story
sure.
about that? I have a dear friend who was on the board at Beloit College, and he didn't go beyond high school. And I said to him one day, at Beloit we teach critical thinking. Do you think you're a less critical thinker than the Beloit students? He said, no, indeed. I think I'm a fine thinker. And I said, well, we also teach communication skills. Do you think you communicate less effectively than most people? He said, no. He said, I think I communicate more effectively than most people. And I said, well, then I gather you don't regret not having gone to college. He said, on the contrary, I regret it enormously. And I said, well, how can that be? And he said, well, because I feel left out from culture, from literature and theater and music. I feel left out. And I went back to him, Kathleen, a year or two ago and asked him about that. And he said, and asked him if he was representative of business leaders who admire the liberal arts education. And he said, I was, but I think I am less so. And I suspect he may be right, because it's not just nervous parents, and it's not just kids. It society today is valuing this kind of broad education less. And I'm sure if you follow the financial fortunes of public radio carefully, you see that yourself.
Right, exactly. Let's welcome phone call. Well, welcome them. We have a full bank of phone lines going already, so we'll take your calls in a moment. The value of a liberal arts education is what we talk about this hour, and our guests have both written about this subject. Vic Farrell, a former president of Beloit College from 91 to 2000. Professor Warren Goldstein is a professor and chair of the Department of History at the University of Hartford. 800-486-8655, or if you'd like to send an email, you can do that at talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, and let's start with Frank from Madison. Hello, Frank.
Hello.
Hi.
Excellent guests. And
they're good, aren't they?
I hope you all enjoy the inauguration in more than one sense tomorrow.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to personalize this, but I never received a liberal education. Through the years, my colleagues have always been people who ask questions and expect you to carry the ball in new directions, just as an implicit assumption. There's a book that Arnold wrote, 19th century, called Anarchy and Civilization, and he argued very strongly against utilitarian education and for, broader education where people generally respect ideas and inquiry. And what we now have is institutions, and I'm familiar with at least one great land-grant university, have become certificate-granting institutions. And actual learning can go on within them, given the resources, but it's largely not the point. And this is extremely dangerous. And Arnold pretty much called the utilitarians both Philistines and barbarians. And he wasn't calling names. It's a very dangerous direction to go. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank. Always love to hear from you. Professor Goldstein, you want to start with response?
Well,
we're still working on his statement that he's not liberally educated. Doesn't sound that way to us.
No, it never sounds that way.
There's a danger that folks in my and Vic's position have, which is that I don't really think that it's right to call professional education barbaric or the education of a Philistine. And there's a tendency, I mean, one of the reasons why, and Vic is quite eloquent on this and the things that he's written, one of the reasons why liberal arts colleges do badly is that those of us who teach the liberal arts have done a really crummy job of making our case to the general public. And one way to make a bad case is to trash everybody else. No one really trusts you when you do that. I think that what we need to do is to make a better case for the importance of what we do. And I think too many professors don't do that. Too many people in my profession would rather only speak to other folks in our profession as opposed to speak to the broader public. In the training of graduate students, speaking to the larger public, teaching, now Vic really wrote really eloquently about this, the graduate students aren't taught to teach. Teaching is considered a kind of distant cousin to the real work of first-rate research. And that is a real problem. So I think that much of the responsibility, I mean, as much as I'd like to complain about a society where the dollar reigns, this strikes me as old and kind of not particularly helpful hand-wringing. I think it really behooves those of us who make a living in the liberal arts, however small it may be, but something that we're committed to defend what we do and to say up front why it's important, why we love doing it, and to do it better, for that matter. We don't do it nearly well enough. We have too many crummy teachers in our midst, and we don't do enough to change that. And we don't teach each other how to teach as well as we should.
Vic.
Yeah, I'd like to focus on Frank's word, utilitarian. If you study something in order to learn how to do something, like repair an automobile or operate a computer or run a Parks and Recreation Service, your mind focuses on the knowledge you are acquiring, not on the act of acquiring it. And if you study something that is equally as important, but doesn't lead directly to a career, philosophy, political science, your mind focuses on the act of learning rather than on what is being learned. And that is enormously valuable, because that is a skill that is then transferable to learning how to repair a car or how to run a park program. So I think a liberal education is very utilitarian. It's just utilitarian. It's utilitarian in the sense of learning a skill and an attitude rather than learning how to do something.
Mm-hmm. Right. I also wish I knew how to fix a car, though.
Well, that's what Click and Clack can tell you. You just call them up and they'll fix it for you.
Okay, or build a house.
You're willing to be belittled a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think
but
I would do
nice
that.
Way.
I don't think I'd do that. Bill from Oshkosh, hi.
And I know a lot of elderly people that do. And what I find is that all these people that have had professions their whole lives, when they go to elder hostels, what do? They do the art of the Navajo. They do the history of the Civil War. They do something on Greek sculpture. They're interested in expanding their minds later in their lives when they get a chance to do that. I think there's a hunger there that we haven't tapped adequately.
Mm-hmm.
So the real question, Kathleen, is how to get liberal education to more people, not how to figure out who deserves it and who doesn't, or who can benefit from it and who can't. It's very hard. I mean, it is conceivable that there are people who can't possibly benefit from thinking, but it's hard to imagine that, at least for me. I live in a rural area, and I had a young man come to see me one day, and he said, when I was in high school, I didn't pay any attention to it because I knew I was going to be a farmer. But he said my best friend was a serious student, and now he's gone on to get a master's degree, and he's going to become a high school teacher. And I see how happy he is, and I think it's too late for me. Do you agree with that?
Hmm.
And to be frank with you, I think it was too late for him.
Hmm.
We need to capture kids early with good teaching and good involvement and good read and reading. Reading is just hugely important.
Mm-hmm.
We're not reading anymore, you know. The reading is just on the way out. And with good preparation from people who themselves are liberally educated, and that's another thing, Warren, that that I think about the training of college teachers.
Sure.
An awful lot of them aren't liberally educated.
Right.
They're narrow specialists. They're like click and clack.
Although click and clack are kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Click and clack actually know a lot about a whole lot of different things, because you can't go to MIT without learning something besides...
Oh, well, they are hugely well-educated.
Technology.
Right.
Nor would they have an audience if it weren't for folks who listen to public radio.
There you
right.
go.
Right. Bill from Oshkosh. Hi.
Hi. You guys have taken a big bite out of my cookie, I think. I've been waiting, but a couple of points. As a trained PhD and anthropologist, I've been through, and who left because of market forces, left anthropology in the early 80s to go to Wall Street. There are a couple of incidences I find myself in, situations I find myself in now. One, on Wall Street, I said, my God, this accounting, I can't stand it. You know, 16th century Venetians, calculus or something. And I said to my boss, who's boss of the European department, which was quite big, he was all the European companies that had headquarters in the U.S., most of them went through that office. Some went to other banks, inferior banks, of course, but who are not with us anymore. But one should not disparage, and I've heard more than a bit of disparagement about click and clack. And one of my favorite professors at a little college on the hill that I went to teach at MIT in American Studies, so I know they get doused pretty heavily with some sort of liberal arts there, but they act like Philistines, I must say, anyway, as much as I love them. However, the other situation that I've run into...
You might feel differently if you owned a Honda.
Yeah, especially. Well, I buy American Iron except for the two-seaters. Anyway, the question that I run into with students here at Oshkosh often, and there's a usual amount, both in suburban high schools where I've had my kids, or here with people complaining about getting technical skills, even in communities where the college graduate proportion is extremely high. Oshkosh, it's not. And many of the students are first generation. I think maybe it varies between 60, 10 years ago, to 40 or 50 now, first generation going to college. And I just spoke about click and clack last night to a woman in the University Center's latte shop. And I asked her as I always do with the students, they're working everywhere in town, and I think sometimes they worry more about the work than about really diving into schools. And I think they're also extremely conservative and very, you know, after this last brouhaha on the credit markets, very averse to borrowing as opposed to working, which can mean you take much longer to get out. It might be much more expensive in the long run. And they don't seem to have an idea of their earning value. And that gets me to my comment is that I encourage the students that are doing liberal arts things, even if they're teaching, you know, follow your heart, go there. And I think what this conversation is missing is first of all, you're looking at things dichotomously, you know, liberal arts versus technical. And there are people I know that are technically trained, car mechanics, that think conceptually and solve problems beautifully. They may not, you know, have the same cultural interests, it's true, but I think the problem with American education, not a problem, but it's America, and we don't talk about it in the way that it is actually stratified, and so is higher education. And I think the different levels of colleges do very different things, and I would suggest, and they take different, very different kinds of students, and it is high risk for a student from a very conservative background, unless he's brilliant and goes to Harvard or whatever, and there's some very brilliant students here in Wisconsin that do not go to the Ivy League, but I had one that came to Oshkosh because it was half as expensive as Madison, and he was doing pre-med. But the way, I think, is to draw in older people in the community and have the teachers talk to people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, teach them, like the community colleges do. I think the liberal arts would learn a lot, and they might build a great outreach within the community, which is a good start because you can then advertise that around the world. And the other thing is, I think, is to think about when you talk to parents, their target, to say, let's think about where your child might be in 20 years with a liberal education. And we all know that the elites generally do not have, which is a touchy subject, have had a liberal education. And they do get more conceptual training in so-called technical school. But like my banker said, you shouldn't have taken more accounting you should have taken more philosophy.
Vic, you want to start with response?
Well, it's a fair point. Of course it's a fair point. I really don't have anything to add except to say that it's not dichotomous. You're quite right. It is any more than reading and repairing an automobile is dichotomous, or thinking and playing baseball are dichotomous. They're all part of a full and roundly educated person. And I stress baseball because Warren is a great expert in that area, along with his history. So I agree.
Thank you very much for your call, Bill. Getting really good calls. We always do, all you liberally educated people. Let's go to Randy. Hi, Randy.
Yes, hi. Fantastic topic. I just have a practical suggestion. If you're a parent of children that you want to have wind up with values in the liberal broad-mindedness vein, and you find yourself in a school district of talented teachers, what I did was engage them behind the scenes and just find out, how can I support you?
Mm. What a terrific idea.
And what I did was, when our school district needed a referendum passed, I let them know, I'm walking door to door and we're finding votes for you. I'm telling my children, take your class and perform at your top in that class. And then as they went through school, this instructor understands the Civil War. Listen to that teacher. And then as they're out now, I have one of my, I hate to call him a child, one of my children who's now a young man is going to finish as a doctor and is going to go into psychiatry. Another one is majoring in, he's chosen Arabic and language. Another one, I don't want to brag on them, but they're, I believe they had a great school system that I chose behind the scenes to support. They were from their sciences, hard sciences, through to the liberal arts, very strong. The teachers were strong, but they needed my encouragement, and my children needed to know, these are good people. Listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're a parent, one of the practical things you can do is say, these liberally minded, great mentors, pay attention to them. And so that's what I did as a parent, and I just would offer that as something you can do to counteract the click and clack popular. It's hard to come against that entertaining popular notion, knee-jerk notion, that is very attractive, that grabs people. You have to, behind the scenes, give the idea that, no, the smarter thing is to be broad-minded, and you have to do that sort of privately, steadily.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Randy, for your interesting point. Let's talk about teaching, and obviously both of you would like to have faculties where parents and everybody is saying, listen to these people, what they say matters, they're the best at what they do. Both of you have written about attracting the best to the profession at your schools and the problems with retaining them. Would you like to comment, Vic, start?
Well, you know, the system of education in the United States is very unique. The notion that everyone in some broad sense takes many of the same courses, that it's not specifically directed at some career objective, is uniquely American. If you go to Oxford and you're going to be a barrister, you'll take a different set of courses in your first year than if you're going to be a historian. That is not true in this country. And that is very unique. And one of the things that's striking about it is that the people around the world who we all worry about, United States is sagging in education, the Asians and Europeans are coming up. One of the things they're doing is standing in line to come to U.S. schools, not just liberal arts colleges, but the great universities, the honors colleges, the state schools, all of which provide broad general education. So they perceive the value of it, and while that's happening, we seem to be turning away from it. We seem to be afraid. That's really the key word, I think, for parents. Parents are frightened about their kids being able to get ahead and to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Warren was pointing at. They shouldn't be. You know, they really shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wonderful quote from a French diplomat in Egypt some years ago who was asked why he sent his kids to the American school in Alexandria rather than to a French school. And he said, French schools teach you how to be an administrator. The American schools teach you how to survive on your own. I believe that. The liberal education prepares you to deal with matters that you're not prepared to deal with. And that's just of enormous value.
Mm-hmm. Professor
Tremendous Wilson. Value. And, you know, there's this, somehow liberal education has gotten a rap in the public world.
It's the word, Warren. I'm convinced of it. We should call it awesome education, and half of the problems would go away.
Right. But it's not. But you see, the notion that it's reserved for the elite is relatively recent in American history. It was considered ordinary for Americans to read Shakespeare 100 years ago. It was considered ordinary for Americans to read natural philosophy, to be able to analyze the amendments to the Constitution, to debate political, not just political events, but political ideas, to debate the shape of the republic. What I would really ask people to think about is that what does it do for American citizenship if most American citizens literally cannot read the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution and have any idea what they are reading?
Right.
And that's a danger. And right now what we have is large numbers of people who, at some point we have to ask who benefits. You know, the ancient Latin question, cui bono, who benefits from American citizens not understanding what their government is doing? And that's not American democracy. It's folks who really don't have much use for American democracy.
Mm-hmm. I hate to go back to money, but let's go back to money because
let's go back to money.
You know,
you've got to go back to money.
The figure that you talked about, $200,000, is a whole lot of money for parents,
sure
obviously. And it seems to me as though all of what we're talking about, which sounds wonderful and I agree with all of it, is pointless if it costs that much money. It's just too much. It's too hard to get in. It's too hard to pay back loans that sometimes you're paying for. I know people who work here are still paying their college loans 10 years later, for heaven's sake.
I paid my college loans for 20 years.
Wow.
I mean, I will be paying for my children's college loans for another 18 years.
So great. Would you make the last payment?
Well, I'm sure it is, but some people just can't do that. They can't do it. So what do you do about it?
Let me put a fact on the table that doesn't get mentioned very much,
yeah.
And this is true. At every state that has private colleges and flagship state public institutions, the University of Minnesota, for example, and Carleton,
mm-hmm.
or the University of Wisconsin and Beloit,
mm-hmm.
in every one of those circumstances around the country, the SUNY schools in New York, the average family income of the students at the flagship universities is higher than the average family income at the expensive private schools. Now, how can that be? And the answer is, in part, that we talked about accounting. It's a bizarre bookkeeping that's done in the education business. We say that the tuition to go to a college is $35,000, and we put it down on the books. If a student signs up, we write down we've received $35,000. Then we have a separate account on the expense side that we call scholarship aid,
mm-hmm.
or financial aid, and we write that down, and we write down $20,000 there. So the college has actually gotten $15,000, but they published the fact that the cost of going there was $35,000. Now, the reality is that
almost no one
is paying the list price,
mm-hmm.
and we don't use the word discount. It's a big mistake, I think. But that's what's happening. And you know, in graduate schools, the tuition is negative in many cases. The students are actually paid to go there. We say that they're really getting money for serving as TAs or instructors, but in fact, graduate school at many great universities is free, or is more than free. You're paid for it.
You know, and let's talk. I want to talk about money as well, because this is very important. I mean, I have talked to students. I mean, I know a student who is going to graduate from my university with $90,000 in debt. And I think that's too much.
Yep.
I've actually thought hard about whether it would be it's been worth it for him. You know, whether the difference between what he would have borrowed going to University of Connecticut or going or to Rutgers in New Jersey and coming to our university is really worth $90,000. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I do know. Lots of parents are put off at the idea of borrowing for their children's education. And when I talk to parents, I make the very strong argument, because I know they're excellent loan programs, that I think it's worth paying for the best education you possibly can, and that includes borrowing for it. And I come out of a tradition and a culture where parents sacrifice for their children to go to college. There are other cultures where college is seen as less important. But college is crucial in terms of social mobility in the United States. And I think that parents who, I think it's, if there's something worth sacrificing for your children's education is one of those things. And it may be the most important thing. And so I make that very clear to parents. I think it's worth borrowing large sums of money to send your child to the very best school that he or she can get into.
Mm. More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655. Professor Warren Goldstein, professor and chair in the Department of History at the University of Hartford, and Vic Farrell, former president of Beloit College from 1991 to 2000, our guests as we talk about liberal arts education. And our phone lines are all busy. Tremendous interest in this topic. Just keep trying to get through. Or send an email if you'd like, talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And a reminder that our National Public Radio coverage of the inauguration will start at 9 o'clock, so our show will not be with you. Well, it will be, but I won't be here. It'll be wonderful coverage, of course. And then we'll return to our slot on Wednesday at 9 when we'll have a chance to discuss all that happened tomorrow. 800-486-8655. Judy from Wausau. Hello, Judy.
Hi. I just wanted to give a hand to my undergraduate school. I think that I had one of the best liberal arts educations available. Unfortunately, Evolution took care of the school. I was in the beginning class when they opened UWGB, and it was considered an environmental school in the very broadest sense. My undergraduate degree is in community science modernization process.
Mm. Wow.
And if you wanted a skill, you got a collateral. It was considered separate from your education. We were a group that was very diverse because of the fact that it was a brand-new opening college. So there were a number of people who were 30 or above, and we were a very strong part in designing and running that school. But someplace along the line, after about 5-6 years after we had graduated, it became a college like any other college. And I just really feel that the liberal arts education I got there when they were first starting was just tremendous. And I think it's a shame that schools are allowed to evolve beyond the mixed breed and the mixed education we were given.
Hmm. Professor Goldstein?
You know, I think I'll pass on this. We'll wait for another. Maybe we can get a few more calls in.
Okay. That's fine. Vic, you want to respond?
No, but there was something I wanted to say. My mom, in 1917, finished eighth grade in New Mexico.
Hmm.
And with that degree came automatically under the state law certificate to teach.
Hmm.
And at that time, the idea of going to high school was not a given. And that's not all that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Today, high school is a given, and college has assumed the position that high school had 100 years ago. And it's odd to me that we haven't come to think of college as a given, as something everyone should have and everyone should benefit from.
Thank you so much for your call. Eugene from Viola is next. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning.
Hi, Eugene.
Good morning. You just mentioned your mother was taught, finished eighth grade and taught school. Now, either one of your... I put in 2 years in the county normal, two-year county normal, and they taught you creativity, and they taught you survival skills. They also gave you a liberal education. And what that has done for me a couple times around is made me a thorn in the local side of the local politicians.
Good for you.
But, believe me on that one. But anyway... those normal schools, I'm asking, if either one of your guests are acquainted with them, 2 years to 2 years college, 68 credits, 64 transfer to a state college, it costs you $48 for 2 years tuition. Would either one of your guests bring those kind of schools back?
Mm, thanks, Eugene, for the call.
I don't know, to tell you the truth. You know, we don't spend enough time thinking about how to train young people to be teachers. I know that. We get them to have education degrees, and most of them don't like the courses that they get in education schools. So I'm not wild about the way we train teachers right now, but I don't claim to be an expert in such matters.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Gloria from Madison. Hi, Gloria.
Hi. I was thinking really in terms of another way to go about increasing what you might call liberal education among students. I had a liberal education in English, but I also taught in a university, and I taught public relations, and I've never had a course in public relations, but I taught it anyway because I'd learned how to do it. And I also had a lot of journalism students. And what I found, and I think this is true in a lot of curricula, that there's a lot of just technical stuff taught in these classes, how to do an interview, how to splice tape, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. And when students would come to me when I was advising and they'd say, "What? I have some electives, what should I take? Should I take, I don't know, something else like that?" I would say, "No, take sociology, take political science."
Good for you.
Take history. And I think another way to go about this is with the cost of education, I'm not sure you're going to convince a lot of people to lay out $200,000 for a four-year degree without something at the end of it. But I think you could take the courses that they are taking, the majors they are taking, and say to somebody in journalism, you will be a better journalist if you know history and
if you know
philosophy and if you know economics.
Right.
That's the way to go. What do you think?
See, I think that the danger here is what you just said, which is you have to convince people that there's something at the end of it. You know, you can't expect people to lay out the money without something at the end of it. The something at the end of it is someone who's prepared to learn the rest of his or her life, someone who's prepared for the half dozen different vocational tracks he or she is likely to be on, given the way this economy is changing. What you get at the end is someone who is truly ready for this really fast-changing, unpredictable, globalizing, increasingly globalized economy. I think that's terrific. That's a wonderful product.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could produce that everywhere, I think that we would regain a kind of international, what has happened, what Vic quite rightly points out, is a kind of slipping of American education worldwide.
Thank you, Gloria, very much for the call. Let us go next to Andrew from Amory, and that's probably going to have to be our last call. We're running out of time. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, good morning.
Hello.
I am actually 22 years old. I'm currently attending college at the University of Wisconsin River Falls, and I thought I'd get a student perspective into this conversation.
Okay.
I have agreed with your guests on everything they've said about, you know, paying whatever you can to go and get an education, because I think an education is the best thing a person can have. I don't think a student should work when they're at school. They should learn. You're going to work the rest of your life, get the learning done when you're young so you have a better knowledge base for the rest of your life. But my question for your guests are as what they think about professors in the university systems getting teaching degrees. Because I personally believe that there are a fair number of professors out there who do not know how to teach well.
Okay, Andrew, I need to hold you there. We're almost out of time. Vic?
Yeah, that's true. And if I could just finish up on one thing that Warren said, that not only do you get these skills that we've been talking about from liberal education, but you maximize the chance of succeeding in life if you Parents are worried about their kids getting a job. I worry about kids succeeding. And if you look across this great nation of ours at successful people in every walk of life, the overwhelming majority of them are liberal arts graduates. So if you want your kids to succeed, spend the money. It's worth it.
Thank you both so much. It was just
a
wonderful hour.
Should teachers have teaching degrees? I'm not sure. Degrees, I think their degrees should train them as teachers. I think it's the responsibility of their graduate advisors and their graduate schools to help them learn how to be undergraduate teachers. That's something we have to do inside the profession of academia. I think that Andrew has asked an absolutely terrific question. I'm sure he has sat in classes with bad teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something in academia that if we're going to charge the kind of money that we charge and ask for salaries and expect people to understand tenure, then we have to be good teachers.
Thank you so much. Our thanks to Professor Warren Goldstein, professor and chair of the Department of History at the University of Hartford, and Vic Farrell, who is former president of Beloit College. Thank you, Rhonda Fanning, for producing this wonderful hour, and Rob Schroeder for on-air production. Tomorrow, the inauguration of Barack Obama as the 44th president of the United States. NPR will provide special coverage starting at 9. We'll be with you again on Wednesday. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Thanks for listening.